Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help! Hello, friends. Welcome to Yeah.
It's part of my plan.
No. Welcome.
Well, I got three of us. This is good.
Yeah. Welcome to
post-career meltdown.
The triple threat that's in the studio tonight. What I'm trying to get to is we don't have a guest yet, George. And we are.
We have you.
Well, that's true.
We can do on-air therapy. Catch the beautiful snowstorm, huh?
It's gorgeous. It is gorgeous. And it's a very big winter storm right now. And if our guest gets here, we'll be thrilled.
Okay. I didn't know Buzz Maxwell was going to be in the studio tonight.
He does make cameo appearances from time to time.
I think Alex and I are honored that he's here.
Yes. Well, it is the three of us tonight, and I was trying to connect a few dots. I didn't do a great job of that. But, George, you are the man who pays attention to what other people ignore. I think that's what makes you a genius.
No question about that. I've never been referred as a genius before, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, I'm using that very loosely.
Okay.
I'm not committing to it, but I'm just saying you're kind of in that category. You do pay attention to what other people ignore. And we've gotten some letters to the station for George over the last month or so when you announced that you were struggling with some health issues. And the support's been phenomenal. I think there was a couple of people that were very supportive, and they sent you verses. And then there was another guy who wrote named Jerry who said you owe him $90 for gutter cleaning.
Well, you know, the other one that was kind of, I don't know, offensive to me, there were a lot of people that were applying for the co-host position, and I want to go on the air tonight and tell people that the medical reports I got, in 6 weeks I should be tumor-free.
Yeah.
So, but we'll keep your resume on file, and we thank you so much for applying for a position that's not open yet.
That's true. There has been quite good news in that department.
It is.
Significant tumor reduction with your chemo, and that's been exciting.
Well, as the doctor said, and you were there, Dr. Mark Sofeld, prayer works.
It does.
So in all seriousness, it's great. Tonight, we're going to talk about Step 10, Bill, and I think it's very appropriate always. It's continued to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted. And we want to do this in our Christian walk, and we want to do it in our recovery, that if we look at what we're doing, are we doing the non-essentials, as you always talk about, the non-negotiables, mm-hmm. the essentials,
yep.
not the non-essentials? Did you spend time in the Word today? Did you pray today? Are you getting enough sleep? If you're in recovery, are you going to your support meetings? Are you going to church? How are you doing around the house? Are you paying your bills? Are you taking care of responsibilities? Really, what we're doing, are we doing what we're supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to look at. Dr. Glenn Pickering, one of our frequent guests, and Glenn's such a good guy, and he talked about what the step says is you're wrong, you're not bad. And I think we get stuck on that if I'm wrong, I'm bad. But
mm-hmm.
really, you're just wrong. And the quicker we admit it and get back on the beam, the better off we are.
Mm-hmm. George, do you sound a little legalistic at times when you talk about the little list of things? Are you reading your Bible? Are you going to meetings? Does that sound legalistic, or is that just plain old good common sense?
Well, I think it's common sense, but if we're in a bad spot, we really don't want people telling us what to do. And
mm-hmm.
I think as a recovering person, I really go back to the first commandment that you have no other God before me. I don't like God telling me what to do, and that's the nature of my problem.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, we don't like structure, but we need structure. And I think part of the maturity that we get is we need instruction. I need to be teachable, and God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Am I doing what I should be doing?
George, let me read a verse. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3, for a time is coming when people will no longer listen to right teaching. They will follow their own desires and will look for teachers who will tell them whatever they want to hear. They will reject the truth and follow strange myths. Comment on that.
Well, it's just right on. It talks about in the last times, people will be disobedient to their parents, so on and so on, lovers of money, lovers of themselves, boastful. And what we see is people that aren't teachable. We have to humble ourselves and go, there is a God. It's not me. There are some requirements if I want to change my behavior that I have to do certain things to get different results. And if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to get the same thing. You've heard that as insanity, like something magical is going to happen. But, yeah, I need to spend time in the Word every day. I need to pray every day if I want to walk with God.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to do it first thing in the day. That's when we do it. And we start our day off. I always talk about, Bill, that I pray for sobriety before I get out of bed in the morning. And that way it works because I don't want to leave bed unarmed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we start with. And, yeah, is it, you know, are you being legalistic? I don't know. I think there's certain requirements.
I'm just asking.
Yeah, but don't you think there's certain requirements like working out?
Those are common sense things.
Well, we don't have a monopoly on that.
No, we do not corner the market on that at all. But let me just finish this verse in chapter 5. It says, but you should keep a clear mind in every situation. Don't be afraid of suffering for the Lord. Work at bringing others to Christ. Complete the ministry God has given you. I think you're doing that really well now, George.
Well, I was until we started the show. We kind of got off to a rough start today.
No, we didn't.
You know, with the snow and everything we did.
Oh, yeah, we did with that.
But it's great to be here. I'm real excited about our guest tonight, Bill.
Awkward pause.
That's a cue. I just queued it up for you. Mitch is here.
Yeah, Mitch is here. Mitch and Tom is here, too.
Well, Tom's here, too. Tom's been here before.
He's been on the show.
You know.
Our ratings plummeted, but this will bring him back up.
It should.
Yeah, I think it will.
Yeah,
I think
get
it will.
Tom angry. He wrestled in college. But I think that's what we look at when we continue to take our personal inventory, and when we're wrong, we change it.
Mm-hmm. And the personal inventory is step 10?
It is.
Okay.
It's kind of like the book of James where it says, you know, we look in the mirror and a guy can forget what he looks like. I want to have people in my life that tell me, hey, you're either doing what you said you were going to do or you're not. We want to have some community in here to... When we take our inventory, we have to give permission for people to take our inventory also and say, how do you think I'm doing? Be honest.
Yeah.
And that's very helpful.
All right, George, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, our in-studio guest has arrived, and we are very excited to have him on the air. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. We're so glad you joined us tonight. On this very snowy night in the upper Midwest, here in Minnesota in particular, we're having the good old-fashioned snowstorm.
It is, Bill, and it's very pretty.
Yeah, and so I usually don't get my Ferrari out this early, but this year I did, so, you know, I'm suffering tonight.
Yeah, but it looks good.
It does look nice. It's nice. All right, George, we have Mitch Glazer in studio with us tonight, and I saw his story on a very... inspiring website called I Found Shalom.
Okay.
And he's here with us in studio. He's an author and an all-around great guy, friend of Tom's.
Well,
yeah,
so Tom's a great guy, so let's get rolling. I want to hear the story.
Yeah. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Shalom.
Shalom,
Bill
yeah.
and George, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I watched your video, and you sounded like you started off as a pretty rebellious kid at some point. And you went down the party route, didn't you?
It didn't take me long. I was raised in a pretty nice Jewish home, though.
Okay.
In New York City. So I like to say I was born and raised in the Holy Land, Brooklyn.
You know?
and my family were a great family, and lost a lot of my relatives in the Holocaust, and you know, so pretty typical boomer upbringing. And then everything was, you know, I was expected to go to college and become a lawyer or accountant or a doctor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to become an unregistered pharmacist. You'll get that.
That's very funny.
I got it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. George, you got it right away, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How long did you do that?
Well, I started young, so at 14, and progressed in my career and added marketing to that repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Went to college when I was 17, dropped out of college when I was 17, and this is, you know, 1969, 1970, and then traveled out to the only place where you could really find the answers to life, assuming I was looking for something, and that was California. So I went to San Francisco.
Oh,
California.
Cool.
So you were in San Francisco in 1969?
I'm a pretty stereotypical guy.
You know, I didn't see this just looking at you. You know, maybe the van out in the parking lot, you know, with the psychedelic paint job would have thrown it.
I've got the tie-dye T-shirt under my shirt and tie.
Okay. There had to be some great bands out there at that time.
there were great bands, you know. I'm a guitar player, too, so I loved it. And so then I went really off the deep end and had some experiences that really started to provoke me to change my life. And I don't know how much time we have. I could share a little bit of it.
We'd like to hear a lot of it. We've got quite a bit of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was robbed at gunpoint.
At what age?
17.
Oh, boy.
And so we built a houseboat in Sausalito, California.
Who did?
Me and my friend Ephraim Goldstein. Sounds Scandinavian.
A little bit.
And then his brother Baruch and another guy by the name of Moskowitz.
Okay.
And so we built a houseboat, and it did float. And we lived there, got out there by rowboat. So it was, you know, pretty dramatic for some Jewish kids from New York City. And so I arranged a deal one day to buy, I think it was 10, maybe 20 kilos of marijuana, something like that, which I could now do legally in Colorado. But anyway, so I arranged this deal. And as I was coming out on the rowboat with this nice young guy who was going to buy the stuff, I did notice a bulge on his side, you know. And we were kind of peace-love hippies. And, well, you know, I didn't think he needed the gun, but he had it with him. And so we ended up on the houseboat. And then we're starting to make the deal. Then all of a sudden, thump. And there was another boat that came right up onto the barge where our houseboat was docked. And probably about 7 or 8 guys ran out. We heard them running out. They burst into the place. They said, get down, get down. And they had sawed-off shotguns and pistols. And so we accommodated.
Yeah.
And we got down. They tied my hands behind my back, and everybody else covered my head with a blanket or something, and stuck the shotgun against my neck. And I couldn't see what they were doing with everybody else. I assumed it was similar. And the guy who was doing it to me said, where's the rest of the drugs? Now, we knew there were 100 kilos more. But the guy who gave us the 10 to sell and had the remaining amount of drugs was crazy, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I now was between a rock and a hard place. You know, do we say anything to these guys, or do we face the other guy? And then one guy starts saying, burn the place down, just burn the place down, take the drugs. And so they took the drugs, they left, obviously didn't shoot us. My whole life came before my eyes, and it only took a couple seconds because I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't much to see.
Yeah.
And all I could think about was, man, I was gonna die, you know, for like $500 was my cut in the whole thing. And so they left. Eventually the drugs got recovered, and I started to get the feeling that maybe, even though I felt my life was out of control, I felt like maybe it was something that was going my way and maybe somebody who cared for me. Now, I was raised more Orthodox, so I was supposed to believe in God, very different than Reform or Conservative Judaism. It's much far more liberal. And so I was supposed to believe the Bible. I was supposed to believe there was a God that really did exist and that there was going to be a personal Messiah. Things that Reform and Conservative Jews, not to get too technical, probably would not see totally. And so I was supposed to believe these right things, but didn't really. And so we decided to give up selling drugs, but still doing drugs, mostly marijuana, psychedelics, and these kinds of things. And so then we moved into San Francisco, ripped down the houseboat, kind of despondent. I got a job teaching outdoor education in the Redwood Forest through the Marin County Board of Education, which is probably one of the most weirdest boards of education in the country.
Good job, though, right?
Yeah, well, I was qualified for it. I mean, not because of my drug-selling abilities, but I was qualified because I went to Orthodox Jewish sleepaway camps my whole life till I was fired once for doing drugs. But I went to Orthodox Jewish sleepaway camps, and so I was an experienced camp counselor. So I got this job, and basically we took kids from the ghettos of San Francisco and brought them out to the woods and taught them about banana slugs and pine trees and things like that. And I really liked it. I liked the kids. It was a good job. But you know, I was starting to get that empty feeling. And then one weekend I went back to San Francisco, and one of the young ladies who was on the houseboat with us, who had sort of gone AWOL, she left and said she wanted to go somewhere else. I can't imagine why. She was a smart girl. And she got picked up hitchhiking by two brand-new born-again Christian ex-bikers.
Mm.
And they were part of a Christian commune up in Coos Bay, Oregon. And so they picked her up hitchhiking, and they said, where do you want to go? She told them where, and they said, come on in. And for the next, you know, 12 hours, they were telling her about Jesus. And they only had about a half hour's worth of information, so I think they were going and going and going. And they finally made it to Coos Bay, Oregon, and again, this, you know, it was a kind of a motif for our lives. In order to get over to this place where they were living, you had to take a rowboat.
Another one.
Across the Coos River a little bit. And they lived on a peninsula. And it was a Weyerhaeuser peninsula, you know, the wood group and paper group. And the guy who ran this was a tugboat captain on the Coos River. I'd never met a tugboat captain before, but he was a tugboat captain on the Coos River, had a long, long beard, no mustache, and he kind of looked like a cross between a Hasidic guy and an Amish person, okay? And so Joni goes out there, and they led her to the Lord. She gets discipled, in a sense, and eventually, some months later, comes back to San Francisco looking for the houseboat, which was gone, but I happened to be that weekend in Sausalito, where the houseboat used to sit, and she met me and said, oh, what a coincidence, you showed up. And, of course, she was already at the point now of knowing the Lord, where she didn't believe anything was a coincidence. And so she said, I've got something to tell you, but let's go back to San Francisco where you're living, and let me talk to you and Ephraim. So I knew something was strange. So we got in there, and she started telling us things that I never thought a Jewish person would ever tell me. You know, Jesus is the Messiah. He's coming back soon. The world's going to end, and you're all going to hell unless you believe in Jesus. So it was a pretty sensitive approach. And then so then Ephraim, who, you know, really did too much stuff. So his brain was kind of melting, I think. And so Ephraim ended up going up to Oregon, and he got saved. They began praying behind our backs. And then they began sending me letters in those days, you know, letters. Actually, handwrite them. And so sending me letters. And I would get them in the Redwood Forest, and I would read them. It was a campground, and I would read them. And so I said, oh, this is terrible. So I've got to go up to Oregon and save them, because they were obviously brainwashed, because Jews don't believe in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably – maybe they were held captive. I didn't know. And so I went up to Oregon, and they picked me up in the rowboat. went across.
Another rowboat.
And then we went across, and I met all these people. And there were about 25, 30 people, a bunch of hippies living there, and then this, you know, country couple. And so, I tried to argue with them. They wouldn't argue with me. I mean, it's frustrating for a New Yorker. And they just were nice to me. And one day he says, just read it. It's in your Bible. He shows me the Bible. He says, the thick part's yours. And so I start reading the Old Testament. But remember, I was raised more religious. It's where it kicks in.
Okay.
So because of that, I at least respected the word of God, even though I didn't believe it. Mm. Even though I looked like a complete degenerate, I still respected the Bible. And so I began reading it, and I found all my heroes, you know, were there. So I already knew these people, you know, Abraham and Isaac and David and a little bit of Isaiah. But I knew these people, and I began reading it. And for the first time, I figured out what made them important was they had a relationship with God. I totally missed that part.
Wow.
Totally. For me, it was national history, you know, and a little bit of religion. But basically, you know, the religion was mostly focused on Moses, but David was kind of a hero to me. And so I kept reading and went back down. I obviously didn't talk them out of it. Went back down, went to the campground. And one day I just couldn't take it anymore. And I said, God, if you're really there, show me.
Mm.
And so this probably happened to you guys, happens to everybody. So that night, I went down to the only phone booth in the campground, outside phone booth, and on the ledge, glowing in the moonlight, was a copy of a book called Good News for Modern Man. Now, I didn't know what it was, so I pick it up. It's got this cleverly designed newspaper covering so that people didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked through the rest of it. It says Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all these people I never heard of. And weird chapter names, you have to admit, for a book. And then it had these little stick figures. And so, you know, and I started noticing that this was probably Jesus stuff. And I looked in the front, it said Modern English Version of the New Testament. So I put this together, you know, even in my state of mind. I asked God to show me how to get to him, which is a very Jewish question. And there was a New Testament glowing in the moonlight. So, of course, I stole it. I brought it back to the bunk where the kids were sleeping. I began reading the New Testament and quickly discovered that what really became a game and world changer for me, that Jesus was Jewish. Now, some Christians might know that, but Jewish people definitely don't know that. We think that Jesus, you know, was either a Christian or something else. And so I began reading the New Testament even more and compared it with the Old Testament, and finally just realized that I came to the conclusion that if I didn't believe this, I'd never be able to believe anything the rest of my life, because it was so obvious, but it was so against everything I was raised to believe. And so from a very early start, I realized the cost for me in actually believing this. And I knew that if I was going to, I mean, I didn't have any evangelists talking to me. I knew that if I believe this, I'd have to take this all the way. Because you couldn't exactly say to your Jewish mother who was raised very Orthodox, I'm thinking about believing in Jesus. How do you feel about that? You know? And so I became a believer. And
how'd that happen? Just you kept reading or?
I read the whole New Testament before I became a believer, but I can't remember everything I read. Mostly was impressed with the Gospels.
So God is got to be talking to you, because as you said, I forget how you put it, but it was great. I'm never going to be able to believe anything in my life if I don't believe this. You kind of knew it was
Jesus,
true.
Jesus jumped off the pages for me.
Okay.
In fact, before I believed, I did something that is extraordinarily un-Jewish. I believed that Jesus was God in the flesh. You know, we pray, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. It's called the Shema. It's a famous Jewish prayer, where we declare the unity of God. So Jews are not supposed to believe in the Trinity. That's horrible. In fact, the only sin that a Jew can commit, according to the rabbis, that puts them in the Jewish concept of hell is believing that God became a man.
Wow.
That God took on a form.
So there's a huge risk here for you, but yet you're going to do it.
Right. Now, I didn't take the risks that seriously because I was so new at everything, but certainly right afterwards it hit me. So anyway, so I accepted the Lord. I expected the clouds to part, you know, and all these other kinds of things. But, you know, instead, I really, as it sounds cliche-ish, but I was flooded with peace and with joy and sense of forgiveness. And look, I was willing to stop being Jewish if that's what it really meant to believe in Jesus. And then the next morning I woke up, and I'll tell you what happened in a moment.
Awesome. George, this is, we're going to take a break when we come back.
Riveting.
It's riveting. We have questions for Mitch, and we're going to get right to him when we return. You're listening to Real Recovery. We'll be back in just a minute. Yeah, George, we're back.
We are back.
Yeah. Pay attention to the show, would you please?
Okay.
For once. All right, we have Mitch Glazer in studio. We're talking about his amazing journey. And right before we went to break, he said, and then I woke up. And I said, time out. We're going to go to break. So we're back.
So I woke up. So drugs had been a huge part of my life, you know, ever since I was a teenager. And all sorts of different kinds of drugs. I was not a cocaine addict. I was not a heroin addict. But I was an addict. And if it wasn't marijuana, it would be some psychedelic. If it wasn't that, it would be an upper or a downer or whatever it was. And I knew it was a problem. And that wasn't totally what was driving me to accept the Lord. It wasn't sort of desperation to be clean. It was just desperation to have something true in my soul. I mean, I was just empty. And I knew my friends were having joy and all that. And so now I had it also, and I woke up the next morning, and I know some people have so much trouble with all this, but God had such mercy on me because I'm such an undisciplined person, I suppose, that I never touched the drug again. Just completely removed it. Actually, you know, I did remember the verse where Paul said something about loving what he once hated and hating what he once loved, and that one really struck me, you know. And I had no taste for drugs. That was it. And so the Lord delivered. I would say that I was delivered. And so God got that out of the way and some of the obvious things out of the way, because then he needed to do the real work in me. And so the real work was not what I was doing, but in some ways it was what I was not doing. And so the Lord began really working in my heart and my life, and eventually met some believers, and then I finally met a Jewish believer. I had a lot of miracles happening in my life. Mm. You know, I'm a pretty conservative person. Even when I was a hippie, I was still conservative. And I was.
Did you wear a suit, or what was going on there?
No, I cleaned my long hair.
Okay.
I had a Jewish mother, you know.
So you just, God just took the desire to do drugs, gone.
No, actually, it was further. I was repulsed by drugs.
Nice.
Yeah, so I didn't.
What a gift, huh?
It was a gift. I was just totally repulsed. And so the Lord continued to help me grow. And then one day I was praying that God would introduce me to some Jewish believers, because most Jewish people believe in Jesus, really haven't heard of anybody else who believed in Jesus. So I knew about my two friends. I actually didn't know that they were Christians in California. I think there are now, but okay. I've changed, you know. But I never met a Christian. I mean, you have to realize, I mean, Jews don't know Christians. We don't. Mm-hmm. People say, well, we're doing a lot, you know, coming into the Passover season, and there's amazing parallels between, you know, the Passover supper and the Last Supper and all that. And people say to me, didn't you see this? See what? Jews don't even know the story of Jesus. We don't know it. We're not supposed to look at it, and we're not interested in it. So why would I see anything? But now I began to see it everywhere.
Mm. That does make sense, though, doesn't
Total
it?
Total sense.
But I wouldn't have thought about that till I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, so I prayed and I asked God if he could just leave me to other Jewish people, because I really actually thought I was crazy. At this point, I said, you know, I mean, what am I doing? I know it's true and I'm happy, but I mean, this is nuts. So I went to Sausalito again, sat on some rocks. The water was kind of lapping up on the rocks, and I was staring at Alcatraz and a couple sailboats and just saying, God, you've got to show me other people who believe this. I really feel abnormal. But now I'm talking to God, which was really different, because Jews, remember, and particularly Orthodox Jews, we don't talk to God. We pray set prayers in Hebrew. So it's not like we just talk spontaneously to God. And so that was a massive shift in my life already. And so I asked, you know, Where are they? Anyway, so I look down and there's this like little piece of paper floating on the wave. And I kind of knew that it was headed for me. And so this little piece of paper floated onto the rock where I was seated. And it was a gospel tract that people from Chosen People Ministries were handing out in Berkeley across the bay. And so there was an address there and a missionary's name. And so I hitchhiked over to the missionary. And that's how I met my first Jewish believer.
Wow. So a tract was being handed out in Berkeley, and somebody threw it away, or it ended up in the water and drifted over to you.
I'm hoping in heaven I'll find out the origins of this, you know. But they were not being handed out. I met the guy who was handing them out. He says, I wasn't handing them out in Sausalito. I was handing them out across the bay.
Wow.
Mm. And then
that's cool.
Yeah.
And you responded to it then, because you figure it has to be from God, huh?
Well, I prayed. And see, I was getting used to this now.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a new discovery. So I would talk to God and ask, and then he would do something, you know, which was never in my existence before. And it's not particularly an Orthodox Jewish way of operating, you know. The religious Jewish people, I think, and they might disagree with me, but I think do not have nearly that intimacy with God. Certainly that we have through Jesus, but there's just not that. God is really pretty far away, above all, beyond all. He wants you to be obedient to the Torah, you know, to the Mosaic Law and so on. But it's not this, you know, personal understanding and knowledge and relationship with God. And the one thing I do think that religious Judaism does bring to the table that Christians should probably listen to is an understanding of the holiness of God. And I think that's a beautiful part
of
Judaism.
The reverence and the holiness.
Yeah, the reverence
for God. Majesty.
Yeah.
And is that why then they feel that they can't have access? Is that why they say the prayers in Hebrew are one of the reasons and not a direct prayer to God? Is that part of that? He's too holy to contact directly? It
could be part of that. You know, I once was sitting on a plane and this Orthodox Jewish guy was sitting next to me and took out his prayer book and was praying the prayer for travel. So after he was done, I leaned over to him and I said, did you include me in your prayers? And he says, oh, I included everybody in my prayer. I said, oh, okay, that's nice. I said, I just prayed too, and I included you in my prayers as well. He said, are you Jewish? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, I don't usually use a prayer book or a siddur. I just sort of speak directly to God. And he looks at me and says, really? I said, yeah. I said, ever since I became a believer in Jesus, that's the way I pray. You know, the worst thing that happened is he changes seats. and so I was out with it. I figured, you know, we had 4 hours, so now we could have a good discussion. And he looks at me and he says, so you don't use a siddur, which is the name for the prayer book. I said, well, sometimes I read the siddur. It has some really beautiful prayers, but I'd rather pray my own words. He says, and this is a genuine question. He wasn't being harsh. He said, do you think your words are better to pray than the words of our sages? And I said, may not be better, but they're mine. And I have a relationship with God. I think he wants to hear from me. And he just smiled at me. And then we had some great conversations all the way through. So I don't think Jewish people intentionally think that the holiness of God puts such fear into them that they don't want to relate to God except through Hebrew prayers that maybe are a little bit more distant. I just don't think that's the way we were raised. You know, we don't think about it.
Okay.
Just natural.
And part of the reason I asked is, you know, after Christ was crucified, that, you know, the curtain was torn in the temple, and I thought maybe that, not, you know, they don't have access. But his question was really a good one, and I loved your response, you know.
Well, of course, Jewish people, again, that's in the New – anything that's in the New Testament, a Jewish person wouldn't know. And so a Jewish person wouldn't know that the curtain in the temple that divided between the Holy of Holies and the holy place, they would not know
that happened. But the thought might be there about the access, right?
Yeah, the thought would be on the access, yeah. And that's what my life is all about now. I mean, I know that, and God bless you for having this show where you're giving people who maybe have trouble with addictions and these kinds of issues, because I understand them, obviously, firsthand. I mean, it's so wonderful that you can encourage people and give them hope. I think hope is so important. But you've got to have power in that relationship with Jesus, or else your hope won't get you anywhere. You know, and you know that, and I don't know that. But my focus in life is probably not as much on helping people sort of overcome drugs. I give my testimony. And I was really eager to do it today because I know that there are people listening that are struggling. And if you are struggling, you need to understand that it might be a tough road, but we also have a God who can really take these things away if you just let it go and let him do it. And so it's very hard. But the Lord is totally capable. And I'm one of those that experienced this level of deliverance. And I still feel the same way about drugs. I'm still repulsed by them, and it's never gone away.
What a gift that is.
Huge gift.
Part of what our show that's really important, and this ties in so well, even if you had stopped your behavior, which is fabulous, if you don't find Jesus, and a lot of the people in recovery rooms, the traditional recovery rooms, have a higher power. And the Bible says, by no other name are you saved. I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. So where this story really ties in for me is, number one, on your recovery from addiction, but number two, that you found Christ, because that's really what we want to do on this show. And that story, Bill, is so interesting to me. And the odds of that happening, you know, like the track floating on peace, finds good news for modern man. But also, this goes against everything that he was raised with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a risk here, but yet God gave you peace about that, and he also took away not only the desire for drugs, but you hate drugs.
Right.
Great story.
And, the other day I was with a young guy. I live in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And so I was this young guy came over to my house, and I know his father. And this is a kid who was raised in a believing home, but he was really pretty far from the Lord. And he was in the business. He was a bartender. And it's hard to get away from alcohol. And I sat there with him, and it seems that just a couple days before, he accepted the Lord. And when I started hearing him, he said, "You know what? I've stopped drinking, and I'm just so hungry for God." And he had actually began to find the Lord at an AA meeting. And he said, because he was raised in a believing home, you know, they were going through all the different steps, AA steps. And in his own soul, he began applying every step to knowing Jesus. And he said, by the end of the AA meeting, I knew that I needed to give my life to Jesus.
Love that.
And so he did. And he says it's so transforming his life. And, you know, he's Jewish. I mean, you would think that he would say that the higher power is God. That's a good, but for a Jew to say, take the next step and say it's Jesus is a really big step. But he did. And you can see this hunger for God in this guy. So I said, so do you want me to help you find a church? Oh, yeah, I really want to go to a church. How about a Messianic congregation? Oh, yeah, I really, really want to go to a Messianic congregation. I said, what about a small Bible study? He says, oh, man, I would love a small Bible study. I said, how about a personal Bible study? Went, oh, man, can that happen? You know, it's like, you know, I mean, talk about transformation before your eyes, you know. So this guy really is gripped with God. And I think if we could give people a vision for what it's like for the Lord to control your life, it means you need to let go so that God can control you. And when God controls you, you're giving yourself over to someone who made you, who loves you, who's all-powerful, and who will never allow harm to come your way, particularly not from his hand. He'll protect you. But it's really hard to lose that control.
Really? I know you're talking about new converts. I'm sitting here thinking about my own walk, Bill, that everything you just said matches the things that I struggle with. You give God control over all areas and all the time and not take it back. I think that's a struggle for a lot of us.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why he injured Jacob's thigh, you know, to remind him day in and day out that I'm strong, you're weak, stay that way.
Okay.
You know?
George, how come we're not this interesting on the show?
We're not this interesting off the show either.
That's
Bill.
A good point. We're going to take a little break when we come back. More with Mitch Glazer. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. Be back in a minute. Fastest hour on radio, George.
No question.
We're down to our last segment with Mitch Glazer. And today is the Feast of Purim.
Yes.
Please explain that.
The Feast of Purim began last night. You know, Jewish holidays begin the night before and then the next day. So the Jewish day, evening and morning, the first day. See?
Okay.
So today is the Feast of Purim, the Feast of Lots, where we commemorate the fact that we're not dead.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good start, right?
Yeah. You should be interested in that, George.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And so basically what happened in the book of Esther is the Persians, of course, took over Israel, the Medo-Persians, from the Babylonians. And you had King Nebuchadnezzar, King Achashverosh, not Nebuchadnezzar. He was earlier.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. It is. It's easier for me to say it in Hebrew than in English. Ahasuerus. I just can't. It's very difficult to pronounce. So Ahasuerus, much easier.
Oh, yeah.
So he needed a wife because, you know, his first wife, Vashti, lost her, was so in love with him, she lost her head. And then you have to read the book to get the humor.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's plenty of it, too.
So they had a beauty pageant. They chose this nice Jewish girl, Esther, because you know how some young women have a, you know, sort of a show mother that's pushing them mm-hmm. into beauty contests?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she had a show uncle, and this was Mordecai.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mordecai pushed Esther in. So she became the king's wife, which was a good thing because there was an evil person there named Haman who hated the Jews. And for one reason or another, he didn't think – Jews don't like to bow down. It's against the religion to bow down to a man. And so that was a tough one. So Mordecai wouldn't bow down to Haman, who was the king's, you know, representative. And so basically, early on in the book, Mordecai overheard a plot to kill the king. And he foiled the plot by getting word to Esther to get word to the king. The ones who were going to do the plot got killed, and it was written down in the Chronicles of the King. And then later on, when Haman came along and was starting to prepare this nefarious plan, in fact, he'd already built gallows for Mordecai, the king brought him in and said, I was reading the book of the Chronicles of the King, and nobody ever honored Mordecai. And so he made Haman honor Mordecai. This is a quick summary. And so Haman was really, really angry at the Jews now. And so he wanted to kill them all. And Esther went and interceded. If you remember in chapter 4, Mordecai said to Esther, "So maybe you were born for such a time as this." And even though the name of God is not mentioned in the book of Esther, over and over and over again, you see God put the right person in the right place at the right time. So Esther and Mordecai were in the right place at the right time, and lo and behold, Haman was hung on the gallows meant for Mordecai. And then the king sent out an edict. The Jews were saved. And at the very, very end of the book of Esther, there's a great little passage which says that Mordecai was elevated to the second position in the kingdom. So other than the king, nobody was higher in the kingdom than Mordecai. Now, the moral of the story is found in Genesis 12. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, God said to Abram, I will bless those who bless thee, curse those who curse thee, and through you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So the moral of the story is don't curse the Jews. Right now we have an uptick in anti-Semitism across the United States. Mm-hmm. We need to, as believers and as Americans, we need to pray against it. We need to rise up against it because we don't want anti-Semitism to happen on our watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because any act against the Jewish people, in a sense, is an act against God. It doesn't mean you believe in everything a Jewish person does is right, but it means that if people are trying to harm the Jewish people, then they're going against the Abrahamic covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So we want God's blessing, not God's curse.
Thank you for explaining that to our listeners. George and I, of course, knew that, what you said. So, right, George?
I got goosebumps.
Really?
That was really nice. And the finishing part about applying it for today, that's when I got the goosebumps.
It's okay.
Like, you know how when God talks to you sometimes, you get that? I kind of got that. That was nice.
Mitch,
sorry,
I have a question, but maybe a little tips on how we can reach our Jewish friends for Christ.
Sure. Number one, don't be afraid of it. You know, Jewish people are part of a culture that feels Christianity has tried to harm them. And real, authentic, born-again Christians, of course, usually are not anti-Semitic, and they're not against the Jews.
Right.
But historically, it's been a bad scene. So you have the Inquisitions. You have pogroms in Eastern Europe. You have the Holocaust, which Jewish people to this day think was perpetrated by a Christian country.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jewish people have a very negative feeling towards Christianity. Therefore, if you try and tell a Jewish person you need to consider whether or not Jesus is your Messiah and believe in him, all of a sudden you get a negative reaction. And so it's really important to persevere through that first negative reaction, because Jewish people are wired to be against Christianity. And I just had someone yesterday say to me, I think I turned my Jewish friend off. And I said, Jewish people were already turned off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you can do is turn the Jewish people on through the way you live your life and mm-hmm. so on. And so I think that we need to be very patient. I think that it's important to be able to give a Jewish person something that they can read or look at that bridges the gap and tries to show that Jesus is Jewish and that the gospel is Jewish. And so we wrote a book called Isaiah 53 Explained.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to a website, www.isaiah53.com.
Awesome.
And order a free book.
Awesome.
And then you can read the book and then give it to your Jewish friend. There are lots of tips on the website.
Mm-hmm. If a Jewish person responds in a over-the-top sort of, don't you try to convert me manner, what would that indicate to you about that person?
That they're normal.
That they're normal. Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you did something wrong.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you brought it up and you never should have done that because now you have offended your friend and so on. That's a loyal Jewish response. In fact, in a sense, the Jewish no to Jesus is viewed as a yes to God. It's viewed as an act of covenant
allegiance,
fidelity.
Huh? Fidelity.
Allegiance. Yeah.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
And so that's always going to be the response of a Jewish person. And so you just have to expect it, work through it, and just say, I understand. The other thing is it's really powerful for a Jewish person to hear your personal testimony. And if you became a believer when you were a kid and you don't have much sin that you repented mm-hmm. of previously, you know, you have plenty that you have in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so
– No, actually, he hasn't.
I'm trying to
encourage him to step out a little more.
I was referring to my friend Tom. Who's
of course.
So,
of course.
You have to give your testimony to a Jewish person because they need to see that what they were raised to believe, that Christians are born Christians and Jews are born Jews, is not the truth. They need to see that anybody can remain who they are ethnically, nationally, and have their lives transformed from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
So Jews can remain Jews, right, and believe in Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, George.
I don't know if we have enough time for this, but I always assume that all Israel will be saved. That's in the Bible. Do I miss that?
All Israel who are alive prior to the second coming after many years of tribulation will be saved. So we really want to take care of business now and okay. allow God to fulfill his prophetic word, which I believe, agree with you, is true, Romans 11:25 through the end of the chapter. But if you go a little bit earlier in Romans 11, verse 11, he said, they did not stumble so as to fall, did they? May it never be. But by their transgression, the national rejection of Jesus at his first coming, salvation has come to the
Gentiles.
And then he adds, to make them jealous. So we're hoping that Gentile Christians will accept that wonderful challenge and privilege to make Jewish people jealous with the Jewish Messiah who lives in their own hearts.
Mm. Mitch, thank you so much for coming into the studio tonight and being our guest. I would say, George, of all the guests we have had, he's in that rare percentage of people where God really does deliver them from drugs and alcohol and give them a chance to, like he said, be repulsed by it.
Yeah.
We should all be repulsed by sin, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
But what I look at is the fruit afterwards.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Here. Thank you so much.
Mitch, thanks
You're
so much.
Welcome. Thank you so
yeah,
much
that
for
wraps
having
up
me.
Another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Have a great week. Good night and God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.